Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco-Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Tamales are over 10,000 years old and played an important role in ancient Mesoamerican rituals and festivals. And maíz, the main component of the dish, is one of Mexico's greatest gifts to the world.
Today's episode is all about tamales.
My name is Eva Longoria.
And I am Maite Gomez Rejon.
And welcome to
Hungry for History,
a podcast that explores our past and present through food.
On every episode, we'll talk about the history of some of our favorite dishes, ingredients, and beverages.
So make yourself at home.
Y buen provecho.
I'm from Texas, so I was like, tamales are from Texas. I knew they were Mexican, but there's so many different versions, different kinds throughout Mesoamerica.
There are tons of different types, different names or different regions, but they've been around forever. Actually, the earliest visual reference for tamales appears in a fresco from Guatemala dating around 1500 BC.
Wow.
And you even have images of women vendors selling tamales.
Mm-hmm.
So, and these appear in frescoes thousands of years ago. And there are a lot of Mayan vessels that are used for drinking hot chocolate that have depictions of tamales on
them. On the actual vessel.
They're like little ovals with like red stuff on top. So it's probably red sauce.
Oh.
So they've been around forever, and we see a lot of references to tamales in different codexes, like post-colonial codexes.
Yeah.
And one of them is called the Florentine Codex.
That's like 12 books
that talk about the different aspects of, you know, life in Mexico at the time of the conquest. And they have a whole section talking about tamales, which is so interesting. And this is a book compiled between 1577 and 1587. And chapter 19 of book 10, they talk about different tamales. So they talk about fish tamales.
Fish tamales.
I don't think I've ever had fish tamales.
I've never had fish tamales.
Fish with grains of maize. Frog tamales.
Okay.
Salamander tamales.
Okay.
Rabbit tamales. Gopher tamales. And he talks about tasty, like very tasty tamales. And they talk about the vendors selling tamales softened in lime. And I want to talk about the lime, this nixtamalization process in a minute.
Yeah.
Fruit tamales, bean tamales, pointed tamales, white tamales, rolled shaped tamales.
Oh, wow.
So even tamales with fruit, turkey egg, honey, you know, everything.
They just put everything in the maíz.
They just put everything in there, yeah. But most of them, I mean, there's some meat, like the rabbit and the salamander and all of this, but a lot of vegetables. And also no lard.
Right, which we put in masa. If you don't put the lard in the masa today, it just doesn't seal. Doesn't cook and bake right? Well, I'm wondering if they had more texture then back then.
Well, there weren't fluffy because the lard is what makes it really fluffy. So the original tamales were probably quite dense.
Yeah, super dense.
Because they didn't really have that.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I've seen a lot of codexes where you see tamales depicted in festivals and rituals, birth of a child, and there's, you know, some codexes that, you know, show the tamale being given as a gift, and then also being depicted for hunting and traveling large distances, you know, if these were nomadic tribes. You know, Aztec and Mayan civilizations were pretty settled, but Olmec and Toltec and all of the other tribes before, if they're 10,000 years old, this tradition has been passed along through many, many civilizations. How are tamales related to the religious systems?
Well, the whole idea of just corn, right?
Because
it was sacred. Because it was sacred. And actually, even going back to the corn that we have today, teocinte, which is the original corn that's been around forever, for like 9,000-10,000 years, the original corn looked very different than our corn today. So it was kind of a bushy plant that had maybe 6 kernels. So it really had to be bred to be able to get to what we have today. Actually, the corn that we have today is only like 6,000 years old. But it's something that requires from the beginning, it can't really be pollinated.
Cultivated
by humans.
Wow.
Right. And also even, you know, growing the corn in the milpas together with beans, together with squash. So it's part of this very sophisticated agricultural system. Mm-hmm. And it's the reason why these ancient civilizations thrived for so many years because they had this particular crop. It's not just the plant itself. It needed to undergo, you know, to get from the corn to the masa for the tamal.
Is that the nixtamalization process?
What does that process entail?
We've talked about this in the corn episode, but like not everybody does it.
Not everybody does it, but the true corn, the really good masa, undergoes this process.
Okay.
And yeah, we talked about it during the tortilla
episode. You soak
episode.
It, right? You soak the corn in something?
You soak the corn kernels in calcium hydroxide, which is called cal or lime, but not like the lime that you put in a margarita. It's like this calcium hydroxide, which in and of itself can be toxic, but when you add it in small quantities, like you add this to corn, it's life-giving.
And it removes the skin of the grain.
It softens the skin.
So it makes the grinding easier.
And it's what smells, like if you open up a bag of masa, if it smells a little bit acidic, it's not really what you want. But if it smells like corn, it is this life-giving, you know, nixtamalization process that brings out all of the necessary nutrients. So this nixtamalized corn is the reason why these civilizations thrived for so many years. And even at the time of the conquest, which is, you know, 1519 to 1521, Tenochtitlan, modern day Mexico City, was a thriving city, right? Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, tamales were a big part, of course, of the food, but the city was as big as Paris at the time. Mm-hmm. So I love to think about, people think of, you know, Paris, sort of sophisticated. It was kind of the same.
Yeah.
You know, but
super
they were
sophisticated. Tenochtitlan, the agricultural systems, the waterways, I mean, everything.
Amazing.
For sure. Well, and so this process is pretty sophisticated. And the fact that they were doing this process, and that process is still done today.
That's what's amazing to me. Mm-hmm. You know, that some of these things have been around that we don't even think about it, right? They've been
like
around.
Like tortillas, corn, whatever.
They've been around for millennia. They're just a part of the DNA of Mexicans, and also, of course, in South Texas and California, just like everywhere, tamales are such an important part of the culture. Do you know about the sacahuil from San Luis Potosí?
No, I was just looking at this.
They're so interesting.
16-foot tamale?
Yeah. They're humongous. They're wrapped in banana, but you have to eat them with a spoon because they're different.
How do you cook a 16-foot?
In a giant, they're giant ovens for these sekawit.
They can feed 50 to 150 people and typically served, oh, at weddings, baptisms, quinceañeras. Wait, there's an origin story to this sekawit.
The sekawit, yeah. This is interesting. So in pre-Hispanic times, Emperor Moctezuma sent one of his men, this guy named Kimichtlin, to collect tributes from the area of La Huasteca. And Kimichtlin took advantage of his power and abused women along the way. And eventually the Huastecos from this region, they took revenge. They captured him. They cooked him with chile. They put him in a pit. You know, they cooked him.
Oh my God. They shredded his flesh and cooked him.
Yep.
And put him in a tamale.
And they put him in a tamal, giant tamal, and they served it to all of the women who had been abused. And they shouted, "The problem is over."
Clunk. Kalatil.
Tlanque kualantil. The problem is over. And this was repeated with rapists, with prisoners of war. It's like, you know what? This is what's going to happen to you. You're going to turn into tamal. And of course, this was, you know, forbidden post-conquest.
Once the Spaniards arrived, you're like, hey,
tamales themselves, I think because they're so labor intensive, they have to be for so many people. Today they're made with chicken or pork, of course, or of a combination. But they used to be made with like deer, which you made.
Yeah,
you
we know, made it with deer. Mm-hmm.
Armadillo, have you ever had for armadillo?
I have not, and I don't plan to. I have had snake meat, though.
I've never had snake meat.
Snake meat, just so you guys know what we're saying. Tastes like chicken.
Tastes like chicken.
Frog legs, tastes like chicken.
After the break, we're trying some tamales. Don't go anywhere.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. 19
años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling, and it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together, and that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate, because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me? Sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura podcast network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows, wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Open this bag right now.
What's in there? This is Latina-owned small business based here in LA called Tamales Olmeca.
Tamales Olmeca. Oh my God, I can smell it. I can smell it. So wait, this is in LA.
Yeah, this is in LA. And I have two queso con rajas.
queso con rajas. I love rajas. So rajas are, I used to think they were jalapeno. They're not. They're poblano slices.
Delicious. And then we also have carnitas.
Oh, I love carnitas, which is pork, is what I usually eat in Texas.
Is that what you guys make
well,
when you...
Well, deer. We do deer tamales.
Hunting season.
I know. We do deer tamales and we do pork tamales.
Okay.
And bean. We do beans.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you make here?
I made everything here. I did chicken, beef, bean. I did everything. I do everything.
And so this is this tamal on the corn husk, freshly made. These were made today.
Okay.
And this is the, it's very red.
Super red.
It's super
so this
red.
Is obviously the carnita one.
I think it's the carnita
it
one.
It must be. Usually the red ones are the pork.
Yeah.
Obviously a savory masa.
Yeah, savory masa. Oh, wait.
Oh, no,
I think those
are
rajas. I've never
you
seen
know what
red
I love about
rajas?
Tamales is when they get confused in the bag, it's like you don't know what you're going to get.
Don't know
it's like a grab bag.
Oh, my gosh. I've never seen red rajas.
By the way, these are huge compared to the ones I make.
Oh, my God.
They're really big.
They're delicious.
This is amazing.
Look at the cheese.
Mm-hmm. It's super, yeah, stringy.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. There it is.
Stringy. Oh,
yeah. Oh, my God.
Mm.
So I like, I'm very picky about my tamales. I like a masa meat ratio to be 60-40.
Okay. I like more meat.
I like more meat, too. So
I
think 60% meat, 40% masa.
40% masa.
These
are really, really good.
And the masa is super flavorful.
The masa is really
flavorful.
Because
sometimes you get tamales where masa is just the thing that's holding in the filling.
Yeah.
And it's a little masa-y.
Or there's like a sad little like thing, you know?
Yeah,
like
a sad little filling. I know.
Sad little.
All right.
All right. So now we're going to taste.
So this one must be
the carnitas. This is the carnitas.
Which
pork.
Is white.
Yeah, they're white. That threw me off.
It's so backwards. Is that what it means to be Olmec?
Olmeca. She's keeping us on our toes.
So normally your pork tamales are the red ones.
Are the red ones, yeah. So now she's just doing something completely different.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, that's a lot of meat.
It's a lot of masa, too.
How is that?
You can tell these carnitas have been cooked for a very long time.
Wow.
So much flavor.
Wow.
This masa, again, this masa is white, so it doesn't have chile in the masa like the other
yeah.
one.
Sometimes the masa... It's too, like, I don't
dense.
Know, too dense.
This
yeah.
one's not. This it's, is nice and soft.
It is. And it's not, sometimes the dough competes with the filling.
Yes.
And you can only taste one thing and there's like a sad little strip of chicken or whatever. This is like the perfect ratio.
It's a good ratio.
This filling is so, so, so flavorful.
But you're right. The masa has a personality as well,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like just holding in the filling. This
mm-hmm.
masa is really good.
Holy
no, shit. We're not
this
sharing these.
No way. Are you kidding?
We already finished them.
No.
Hi, my name is Junia and I am the founder of Olmeca. I started making tamales throughout the pandemic and would take them to the restaurant I worked at. And at first it all started at something nourishing and something to provide of comfort during those difficult times. But then the demand just kept getting higher and higher, and I decided to do something with it. So growing up with my mom, we never really made tamales. She just thought it was very labor intensive and she refused to do it. She actually told me that she refused to learn because she knew that she would have to make them. So when I told her that I started a tamal business, she laughed and she could not believe it. But we did buy a lot of tamales from our one lady that would always make them amazing every time. So that would be my biggest memory of tamales.
Did you make tamales growing up?
Mm-mm.
No? In Laredo?
I never grew up making tamales.
Wow.
We always had tamales, but we never... I didn't have the tradition of making tamales.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My earliest tamal memory,
mm-hmm.
my mom used to go visit her relatives in Mexico City, and she used to bring back these tamales, pine tamales sweet.
Mm.
Like you know how the Mexican pine nuts are pink, and
yeah.
they taste really just different?
Mm-hmm.
They're sweeter. They're pine tamales, and they were light pink. And
yeah,
she used to bring a suitcase.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She used to buy them from some nuns
mm-hmm.
and bring back with a suitcase full of them. So we had tamales in the freezer you know, always.
Yeah.
And then we would have tamales like, oh, like Christmas, from down the street, New Year's. Right. Yeah.
Down the street. Maria, exactly. Who sells them. Yeah.
Yes, from the tamal lady or from the tamal guy. And I love the tradition of getting together and the whole family and making tamales. I never really grew up with that. But
every year, it was a sacred day before Christmas. And we'd make hundreds of dozens.
Really?
Hundreds of dozens, because it was all my aunts. My aunt was a caterer, too, so she would make them.
Is she the one that makes, do you have her recipe for a cookie that you only make, like, for 100
the biscuits,
people?
Yeah, oh, the biscuits. 500 people. So we would make 100 dozen, and my mom would get 20 dozen, and my aunt would get 20 dozen. And so they all got, so she's like, you can sell them, you can eat them, you can freeze them, whatever you want to do. But, like, we're dividing the labor evenly as we divide the tamale. Like, it was a whole, the counting was a thing. My aunt was like, nope, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, okay, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, she was really a stickler how many you get to take home. If you participated in the day, you got to take some home.
Did everybody have a role? Like, did you have a specific role?
I was a good spreader.
You were a spreader.
Mm-hmm.
So always. So as when you get older, normally, you're still a spreader?
Yeah, because the spreading is the most important. Like we said, masa to filling ratio.
Yeah.
So rolling them and folding them is the easiest part. So my sisters do that because they're not as good.
I find that hard when I've tried to make tamales. I always have like...
It's the size of your husk.
Maybe it's too big. I don't know. Or I don't know what I'm doing. Or like rolling it and then if they fall apart, like...
I'll show you this year.
You'll have to show me.
I'll show you this year.
So are you still the spreader? This is what
I'm still
you
the spreader. I'm the spreader and I'm also the quality check spreader. So as we push in down the line, I'm like, what is that one? Send
who
it back.
That?
I reject it.
Out.
Spread it more. Go lower. Da, da, da. Yeah. I'm like, that's my job.
And it's amazing. Like, you know, you doing these tamaladas and you're following a tradition that has been around forever.
Tamales can be so different depending on where you're from or how you like them.
We asked you to send us your favorite memories eating and making tamales. Thank you so much for sharing those with us. We'll share one of those messages right after the break.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Welcome back to the show. We loved hearing from you for our special tamales episode. Thank you to everyone who sent a message. This one is from Rosie Veliz from Napa, California, sharing her tradition making tamales inspired by her late mother.
Hi, my name is Rosie Veliz, and I'm calling from Napa, California. My mom's pork and red chili recipe was handed down to me and my four sisters, and we've been making them every December 23rd since we lost her 33 years ago. Because we had nine siblings in our family, we make well over 8 to 10 dozen tamales to enjoy Christmas Eve. Through the years, we've included our daughters, our nieces, and granddaughters so that they learn to make them and can carry on the tradition. And in recent years, some of the boys have taken interest in making them too. When we make tamales, we catch up on each other's lives, gossip, enjoy some wine, and we usually have music playing in the background, salsa, cumbias, so we inevitably end up dancing too. Then we see each other on Christmas Eve for our traditional Familia Veliz party that started way back in the day with our mom, and we enjoy the tamales, the company, and the other delicious food we all bring to share. So the tradition of making tamales every year in December is a very special time for my family. Thank you for allowing me to share.
What is your favorite tamale?
Well, I like the sweet ones.
Oh, you like the sweet
ones? I do like the sweet ones, but I don't like raisins. I feel like raisins ruin tamales, ruin
cookies. Bread, banana bread, fruit cake. Any of the fruit cakes I can't because they're all like raisin cousins.
I'm okay with fruit cake because it's all that and dates and all that stuff. And I like raisins, but it's not a dessert.
No.
But you know, it's never something that I crave, but it's something that I look forward to during the holidays because it represents home, you know? And that sort of passage
it's
of
the
time
ritual.
And the ritual.
And the tradition, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I love the pork. I mean, the pork's my favorite, and I like banana leaf wrapped ones. I actually did on my trip.
In Yucatan, or where did you make
them? In the Yucatan.
Okay.
Yeah, these amazing banana leaf wrapped tamales, but they cook them underground in the bibil, and they come out crunchy, like hard.
But that's interesting.
Yeah,
the whole thing is hard,
just the outside.
So it has a little texture.
It's like, and now I want to make my tamales really in the oven. I want to make them in the oven.
Sometimes when I heat them up, I'll put them on a comal because I like the crispy. I like that it's crispy and then it's
smushy on the inside.
So you have the different textures.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I like that.
That makes sense.
But the banana thing is interesting. The banana because that's not native. I mean, the bananas were introduced 1554. So it's only really.
What, did the Spaniards bring bananas?
Bananas, yeah. Bananas
they're
were
not native
post-conquest.
Too.
Bananas are not native.
But if tamales are 10,000 years old, from Mesoamerica, Guatemalans, surely they had banana.
No.
It was all corn husks.
All corn. I mean, it's really the first food. I mean, you could probably say even before tacos, before the tortilla, it's the tamal and just masa itself is so interesting, right? But even, you know, pre-conquest, they used to take the masa and spread the masa, put the filling, and then it was portable food, right? So people would take it to work, or warriors would take it to war, or if you were going to go hunting, you would bring the tamal. Because it's the perfect food. It's the little package.
Tamale actually means wrapped.
It means wrapped.
In a waddle. I did not know that.
So in Spanish, it's tamal, right? The individual tamal is a tamal.
Uh-huh.
But in the U.S., people say tamale, but they're really saying like tamale. They're really saying the Nahual word.
Oh.
Tamale, means wrapped. Tamale means wrapped. But there's so many, like you were saying, that you like the little ones and not the really fat ones.
Yeah.
I was just in Michoacán a couple months ago, and they have these tamales called corundas, and they're like little triangles.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're stuffed. It was stuffed with like a, almost like a cottage cheese. But not like the cottage cheese, like the American cottage cheese. It's a little
like queso fresco?
It's a little bit more like queso fresco, but softer. So it was that and rajas with a green sauce.
Yeah,
and it was
delicious. Anything rajas, I'm all over.
Sold.
But you know what I found more in Oaxaca and Yucatan when I had the tamales is they are mixed with sauces and chile before you put them in, where I find that our Texas tamales or northern Mexico is more dry. It's not, you know, the condiment is placed after, right? Like you pour the sauce on after they're cooked. In Oaxaca and Veracruz, they put the sauce in the tamale before they cook it. So it's almost, it's a hard thing to do because it can come out pretty mushy.
Yeah.
But they don't. They come out perfect.
The practice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you were in Yucatan, did you have the mukbil pollo? It's almost like a tamal casserole.
No.
But they put they season the masa with achiote.
So it's yes, the masa. No, I did.
You did?
Oh my God. Hello. That's exactly what I had. Yes. The red. It makes it red.
It makes it red.
Yes. Yes. We grinded that. Grounded it.
Uh-huh.
Grinded it.
Ground it?
We grounded it. I don't know.
You ground it.
You ground it?
I think you ground it.
I don't know what we did. We smushed it in a molcajete and put it inside the masa. You're absolutely right. But then we did a really small layer of this salsa and then that chicken. The chicken in it. And it was this Mayan woman who did not speak Spanish. She had to have a translator,
wow.
Her son. And there was a very specific way on how to fold it. And I was like sweating because she's just staring
at
me.
But you're the folder.
I take pride in being the wrapper folder. And I go, how's that? She goes, okay. I said, oh, well, that I understood. I don't need to speak Mayan to understand that tone that I obviously did it wrong.
I know that jazz, that look.
I know that judgment. but no, it was, I love like the masa and the chile and the thing. And they did cook it in a pit.
But there's so many different, you know, tamales in Mexico, different sizes, different flavors. Some of them are mixed with amaranth, which we talked about with the candy episode when we made we talked about the alegrías.
Yeah.
But they have tamales all over Latin America. So it's not just
there's some
America.
In Cuba, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico. So are the Caribbean tamales different? I feel like in Cuba, they're the same as Mexican.
I don't think that the Caribbean tamales are nixtamalized. Because that's a very Mesoamerican process. So Puerto Rico has the guanime, that's corn masa with beans and nuts, which is interesting. But the nixtamalization process is very much a Mesoamerican thing.
And then in Puerto Rico, guanime is a Puerto Rican dish that can be traced back to pre-Columbian times. And it's corn masa stuffed with beans, seafood, nuts. Wrapped in corn husks. That sounds like a tamale to me.
Interesting. Yeah, it's like every home now that makes tamales, everybody adds their thing, to it.
We talk a lot about this in the tortilla episode because corn obviously is so important to Mexico, but there's a lot of GMOs, obviously, that have been introduced and have obstructed the ancient tradition of seed exchange. It's also threatened the future biodiversity of 59 varieties of maíz. And so I feel like, you know, corn is more than a crop. I mean, maíz is a cultural symbol to Mexican identity. And I think there's a lot of work to be done to, like, safeguard the integrity of the maíz, but also the identity of Mexico, don't you think?
Absolutely. I
mean, it goes back so far.
It does. It goes back millennia. I love that you use the word integrity, right? Because by destroying these varieties of corn, we're sort of destroying that, the soul, right, of the country.
True.
And just that it is so intrinsic to Mexican identity. I mean, going back to the Mayan Book of Creation, it's like humans were molded from masa and have it flowing through their veins. So it is part of the culture.
Yeah, it's literally who they are.
It is.
We come from corn.
We come from corn, yeah. Exactly. And it's interesting, now we celebrate Christmas.
Yeah, which is such a Christian
holiday. But corn never died.
A crypto indigenous way to continue their tradition of honoring the corn god. What was his name?
There were tons of different corn gods,
there's tons of different corn.
And tons of different corn. But even depending on the growth cycle, it was either male or female.
Uh-huh.
And then there was the greater god, Cenciotl. And then there was just Chicomecuatl. Uh-huh. Like there were different.
But I'm wondering if we celebrated at Christmas because it was a way to hide you know, during the conquest and this indoctrination of Christianity, for them to keep something.
To keep something theirs.
Yeah. So celebrating it around such a big Christian holiday.
It's possible, for sure. And also, you know, when corn was suppressed and during the conquest, for the Spaniards, it was almost like punishment eating tamales. But people were eating them. I mean, they're good.
They're good. They're not idiots.
They're not going away. And here we are, Christmas, you know, enjoying these little gifts, these little pockets.
These little things that we can unwrap. You guys, we have a really great episode for New Year's Eve. We're talking about the history of Latin American holiday traditions. That's a lot of tradition. How long is that episode? That's a lot. How could we possibly cover all Latin American holiday traditions?
We can't. We could just scratch the surface. But we'll try.
Hungry for History is an unbelievable entertainment production in partnership with iHeart's My Cultura podcast network.
For more of your favorite shows, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
There are a lot of things that matter to me. Family, community, culture, and peace of mind. Hi, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and when balancing life, I have to say nothing brings more comfort than having support. And when it comes to ensuring those things that matter to you the most, State Farm offers the support with an agent available in person or on the phone to discuss your coverage options. Support when you need it, however you choose. That's State Farm's way. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.